Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 127 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you guys for joining us, whether you're on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Boxing Socials, YouTube, GeoSavin, iHeartRadio. We're all over the place. I think we're on probably 10 to 15 different mobile applications. So if we're not on yours, let us know. Send us a message and let us know. But I think we have our hand in many different applications. But jumping right into it, to fight reviews this past Saturday, the 24th of April, from the Silver Spurs Arena in Kissimmee, Florida on ESPN. Florida's getting all the events, boxing, MMA, professional wrestling. They're literally getting all the events. So don't be surprised if Florida's giving these combat companies like tax breaks or incentives to keep coming back. I bet you they are. I don't think they're that stupid. For the WBO featherweight world title, Emmanuel Navarrete improves to 33-1 as he gets the 12th round TKO over Christopher Diaz. This was Mexico versus Puerto Rico in a long history of Mexico versus Puerto Rico in the sport of boxing. This was an entertaining fight. I'm glad it was entertaining. I think Diaz showed a lot of heart, even though Navarrete really, you can tell he was the better fighter, but it was entertaining. If you were just a fan watching it, you were entertained. What'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. You know, where Christopher Diaz is, you know, game fighter, only really lost to, you know, some of the bigger names in and around those divisions, you know, Shakur Stevenson being one. Navarrete looked good, obviously moving up. He was always kind of big for the weight category below. He's got long levers, you know, tall, has a very unorthodox style. That kind of like hook come uppercut that he does just from kind of crazy different angles. I think that's kind of one of the perks and one of the reasons he does so well is he's kind of very unorthodox and you can't really catch onto, you know, his rhythm because, he, you know, you kind of think it out of range and he just dives in with that hook come uppercut. You know, with the huge reach advantage he has, it's such a good, you know, shot to use. And obviously he caught Christopher Diaz with that a couple of times. He knocked him down, I think it was in the fourth round, twice in the eighth, and then another time in the 12th, which was ultimately the stoppage. But, you know, it's a good weight division he's in. Obviously, I think afterwards he said he'd like to fight Gary Russell. I think Leo Santa Cruz still holds a belt in that division. So interesting fights ahead for him. Interesting fights ahead. And you know what Navarrete's like. He's just fights. You know, he's one of the most active, if not the most active champion. So always fun to watch.
Yeah, and on Christopher Diaz, like you mentioned, he's went down several times throughout the fight, pretty much in the fourth, in the eighth, and 12th, you know, three, four times or something like that. And you think, I mean, typically, If we had to estimate in a typical boxing match over, you know, the last 10, 20 years or whatever, the last 100 years, when fighters go down that much, they typically don't make it to the end of the fight. And this guy, Christopher Diaz, made it to the end of the fight and was able to put up some type of pushback that obviously entertained the viewers who were watching the bout at that time. Because I remember when he went down twice in the eighth, I was like, there's no way he's going to make it to the 12th. There's no way he's going to make it to the 12th. And he made it. Well, technically he didn't make it. It got stopped, but making it all the way to the last round, pun intended, was impressive, you know, and a lot of people showed like I don't know if it was last week or a couple weeks ago on one of the episodes where we talked about a fighter, I forgot which matchup it was, where we talked about when the fighter loses, their performance was so memorable, or they, you know, they had so much heart in their performance that they came out better than they actually went in, especially with the public support and anything or something like that. Do you agree with that? Do you think Christopher Diaz, even though he was, you know, as I mentioned, Navarrete was obviously the better fighter and knocked him down several times. Do you think Diaz comes out of this fight with, I guess, more stock going forward?
I would say so. I think, you know, most, you know, boxing fans like to see, you know, guys kind of go out on the shield, you know, as long as, you know, they go out healthily. And, you know, luckily he was, because, you know, I think he showed afterwards, it was kind of like a video of him and Navarrete, and I think some fans or the team, they were all sharing, like drinking a Modelo and kind of laughing and joking about the fight. So, you know, it was good to see that, you know, he was well and in good spirits afterwards. You know, and I think he still is a good name. You know, it's very rare that, you know, Christopher Diaz is in a bad fight. So with the rise of all these Puerto Rican fighters coming up, like Belanga and, you know, Xander Zayas, like who we're going to touch on later, I'm sure that they'll use Diaz on some of those cards, especially over in New York when, you know, Belanga's at that point where he's going to be selling out, you know, Madison Square Garden with all those, you know, kind of local Puerto Rican fans. I'm sure Christopher Diaz will be. Well,
the theater at Madison Square Garden, not Madison Square Garden itself.
You never know.
Not yet. I don't think not anytime soon, but the theater is a different, because I've seen people like, oh, you know, it's Madison Square Garden. I did this, I did that. It's like, well, you got to also remember there's a different theater within Madison Square Garden. It's a lot smaller than the actual arena. So there's a difference. Like Lomachenko, when they talk about Lomachenko, when they've had Lomachenko fight there, I think he's fought inside the theater every single time. So, but, you know, it adds to the mystique and to the marketing, like, oh, you know, he sold out Madison Square Garden, or he fought at Madison Square Garden. Like, well, yeah, you kind of did, but the original Madison Square Garden is the arena, which is what, 18,000-20,000 seats or something like that. So that's the one you want to shoot for. But like you touched on, Leo Santa Cruz has a belt. Gary Russell Jr. has a belt at that weight class, 126. You know, if those two, especially being under the Al Haymon PBC banner, if Gary Russell and Leo Santa Cruz don't fight next, I mean, you know, what's the point? You know, they need to fight. Shakur Stevenson has a belt, right? Or is he at 130 already?
I think he moved up, right?
He did, right. He already moved up. I think Espinoza, who is Oscar Valdez's his manager, tweeted something about Joette Gonzalez, who they also represent, of Golden Boy. He was like, you know, I would love a matchup with Navarrete between him and Joette. I think that'd be an interesting matchup. You know, I think, if you think about it, Joette Gonzalez is only one, his only loss is against Shakur Stevenson. So, you know, yeah. And then Shakur, I think everybody knows, like Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports told us a couple of weeks back, he feels Shakur Stevenson is arguably going to be a number one pound for pound fighter in the future. So, you know, if you have a loss, it's good to have it against somebody like that. But, you know, you got Santa Cruz, Gary Russell on the PBC side, Navarrete over here at the top rank side. It doesn't seem like they'll fight. I mean, who has the other belt? Are we missing a belt?
WBO, WBC, IBF.
Who has the IBF?
Isn't it vacant after Josh Warrington?
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
It's going to be between Kid Galahad and Jazza Dickens.
And real quick, who do you think wins that matchup?
I would say probably Kid Galahad. You know, I do like Jazza Dickens. I think he's very skillful. I think he's kind of slightly underrated. Had, you know, periods of inactivity. Depending on what Kid Galahad we get, he kind of does blow a little bit hot and cold. But he's a lot more experienced than Jazza. I think, you know, if you were gun to my head, I think I would go with Kid Galahad.
But that matchup isn't official yet, right?
It's official, but the date got moved, I believe. They set a date, and then I think it got moved for some reason. So I think it's coming up. I think it may be May or June, because it did get pushed back.
Oh, okay, so it is signed and mm-hmm. not delivered, but it is going forward. Okay, that's good. At least we have something on calendar, because, you know, having a vacant title sitting there in any weight class sucks. So somebody needs to have it. Moving on that card, Edgar Berlanga improves his undefeated record to 17-0 as he gets an 8-round unanimous decision win over Demond. Is it Desmond or Demond?
Demond.
Demond. Demond Nicholson. But Berlanga loses his KO streak, which is, I think, it's a good thing. It's a good thing for him, because you can tell he has a lot of hype behind him. He has couple of these celebrity friends who have shouted him out. He, I believe he's with the rapper Fat Joe, has showed support for him and stuff like that. And I feel like Berlanga, and we've talked about this before, or I've mentioned it before, but I felt like Berlanga felt that pressure that he needed that first round or early KO, or at least a knockout in general, to really deliver on his hype, I guess. And I think that pressured. I mean, he's a young guy. He's still a young kid, and you know, he's kind of getting a lot of popularity. He's gaining a lot of attention. So I think overall, he looked good. I mean, Nicholson went down a couple times in this fight too. You know, there was a lot of knockdowns in this whole event, but he lasted until the eight rounds. But I think this is overall good for Berlanga, because I feel like now he doesn't have that pressure. Cause I don't know if they've asked him in post-fight interviews or in, you know, pre-fight interviews. I'm sure they have, but I feel that he had that pressure going into each of these fights, especially since he started getting more attention on these bigger stages. I feel that he had this pressure to get this knockout, not only a knockout in general in the fight, but a knockout in the first round that he's been getting for several fights now. I mean, what'd you think about the performance, and then what do you think about him losing the knockout streak?
I thought the performance was good. I didn't think that he really even kind of pressed for it. You kind of thought that, you know, he may in the back of his mind think to himself, you know, I'll try to keep it, you know, if the knockout comes. But he didn't really go searching for it. You know, he didn't come out like a bull in a china shop, as they say, and just, you know, just throw heavy hands. So I think he kind of knew that Nicholson wasn't just going to be blown out of there. I thought the performance was good. You could see he was kind of patient. He kind of just kind of maybe thought to himself that he was definitely going to go the eight rounds. You know, he did knock Nicholson down four times in the fight. I thought it was kind of strange that, you know, I know he's obviously not had much time in the ring because they've all been first round knockouts, but to be on his 17th fight and it's still an eight rounder, I thought it was
That's exactly what I was thinking as well. He's 17 fights in and it's still an eight rounder. I mean,
I'm guessing just because of the fact they've all been first round knockouts that they've just, you know, never thought about moving it up, or maybe just the fact that he's never had too much time in the ring. They've never campaigned for it to be a 10 or 12 round fight. You know, especially with this, with him now being, well, going into the fight, obviously being 16-0 and Nicholson was, you know, 23-3-1. You'd have thought he would at least have been a 10 rounder.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see that this was an eight rounder. I was very surprised to see that. Maybe it's a way for, I'm assuming the Top Rank, obviously they've been in the boxing business for, you know, years. They know how to read fighters. They know how to bring up fighters. But I'm assuming that's how they put him in an eight rounder in his 17th fight still, because they obviously, I'm assuming they believe he's not ready for 10 or 12. I mean, he might be ready for 10 now, but there was obviously reasoning behind that. There was obviously reasoning behind that to put him in eight rounds. But like you mentioned, like repeating your point, 17 fights and you're still in single digits. You know, I mean, it could have something to do with the knockouts that he was getting. Like, you know, they didn't really matter, but either way, by this time in your career, however many fights, you would think you would be at least 10 rounds, at least, you know, at least. Cause there's some fighters. I mean, we've seen it. There's some fighters who, you know, they have wins. They have 50 fights, 40 fights, and, you know, they'll be on the undercard of a bigger fighter with a bigger following, and they'll fight like a quick 10 rounder, you know, they'll just fight a 10 rounder, which isn't unusual, but you'll never see a fighter go below a 10 rounds. You'll never see that. You'll see them go between 10 and 12. But once you hit 12, I mean, we know this, once you hit 12 rounds, you're likely never going to go back below that. You're always going to do 12. So I don't know. I mean, like, what do you think about that potential? I don't want to call it a conspiracy, but that potential idea that maybe Top Rank still put him in an eight rounder in his 17th professional fight because maybe they feel he's not progressing as well as they would like. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think maybe just the time, you know, he hasn't had obviously that many rounds due to the fact he's just been blowing everyone out of there. So maybe they didn't want to jump, you know, from, you know, literally just doing one round constantly to 10 rounds because he's never done it. You know, he's never done two rounds, three rounds, four rounds, five rounds until, you know, obviously the fight on the weekend. So maybe they, you know, just wanted to play it safe in case he gassed and just, you know, went straight from obviously, you know, four rounds to eight rounds. And then obviously, you know, next fight, maybe 10 rounds since he's already, you know, done the eight. That's what I would assume, just because of the fact that, you know, it did go all of the rounds. They didn't want to leap from one round to 10 rounds, just in case he, you know, blew himself out.
I mean, when did Top Rank sign him? How many fights did he have when he was signed? Do you remember?
I think he's been with them for a while. Obviously, you know, he was in the amateur scene over in New York and did okay in the amateur scene. And obviously he's been with Andre Rozier for some time, you know, in camp with people like Derevyanchenko, Daniel Jacobs. I think he's been with them for, I would say 3 years.
Okay. So do you know when he was, how many fights he had when he signed with them though? I know it hasn't been like that long. I feel like 3 years is probably a good guess, a good answer to that. But I'm trying to remember how many fights he had when he got signed. Because, I mean, if he comes back in his next fight and he's still in single-digit rounds, then I think it's going to be very concerning. Am I wrong?
It depends how he's performing, I guess, you know. If he does another 8-rounder, 10-rounder, but he's still knocking people out, then I guess you just have to really go with the proven product, you know, over kind of just thinking, you know, why are Top Rank doing it? You know, at the minute he's kind of knocking everybody out apart from obviously Nicholson. Looks good, you know, from what you're hearing, the people that he's sparring with, I don't think he's kind of a gimmick, you know, with the fact that he's in there with, you know,
I don't think it's a gimmick.
Sergey Derevyanchenko and, you know, Jacobs, when Jacobs was with Rozier, even though I think he has gone back, he's obviously, you know, getting good experience in sparring, not necessarily in the ring because he's blowing everybody out. So.
No, you're right. I mean, maybe that's how Top Rank's looking at it. They looked at it as, well, he's had all these KOs so in 16 fights before this past weekend. So he's only fought, if you want to call it fighting, fought 16 total rounds in 16 professional fights. I mean, if you include this past weekend, how he goes 8 rounds, he fought the 8 rounds he fought this past weekend is already half of the rounds that he's fought in 16 professional fights.
Right.
So maybe that's how they're looking at it in terms of, well, development, experience. He doesn't have what they want him to have. Maybe somebody told him behind the scenes, like, hey, you know, like we mentioned, he wasn't really pressing for the finish, which kind of indicates maybe someone told him behind the scenes, maybe it was his team, maybe it could have been Top Rank, who knows? Or maybe it was a collective conversation where they told him, hey, you need some rounds. You need some rounds because you're getting to the point with your wins where we're going to have to start putting you in there with some significant talent, you know, some battle tested guys. He's getting closer to the 20 win window right there. I mean, and like I mentioned, there's other guys who are at this time, they're already fighting, you know, fighting some good guys in 12 rounders, but I think that's a likely conversation that they had with him. Like, hey, you need rounds for your development and for your experience, especially if in your next, you know, what, three fights, we're going to try and put you in there with a significant name, at 168 pounds, which is understandable. You know, if I was his promoter or his team, I understand that. That makes total sense to me. So, you know, I would think he would go to a 10 round bout in his next fight. And maybe in his 20th fight, or how many wins is he at? 17. I would say by his 20th fight, they're going to put him in there with somebody who's kind of battle tested. I would think, but you know, he's called out Canelo, he's called out those type of guys, but you know, I get it. He gets attention from it and stuff like that. But I mean, if you had to think about it, let's just say in his next 5 to 6 fights, assuming he develops and he kind of you can see there's improvement. He's got some more rounds in him. You can see he has a stamina, the boxing ability, you know, what have you. Who is somebody at the current weight class he's in, 168 pounds, super middleweight, that you could see him having a good fight with, like a good matchup?
The IBO champion, Carlos Gongora, who's kind of popped up on those recent DAZN shows. I think he's kind of raw, heavy-handed, you know, hittable. I think him and Belanga would be a great fight, great war. Both just kind of in there, heavy-handed, you know, stand in the middle, just, you know, last man standing sort of thing. I think it'd be a very fun fight. He picks up a, you know, minor world title in the IBO. I think, you know, on BoxRec, you know, Belanga's ranked 15th, and I think Gongora's around 13th. So, you know, it's actually kind of a step up due to the fact that Gongora has the IBO top rank, and, you know, Matrim, I don't think they'll have any issues kind of working together. It's, you know, he's not exactly a huge name on, you know, Matrim's program, Gongora, so I don't think Eddie would have any kind of, you know, rejection of him stepping over for that one fight.
Imagine how pissed off the WBO would be if Top Rank put one of their fighters in to fight for the IBO title. You know, I mean, that'd be interesting to see. But I think that's a good suggestion. You know, especially if they're close in the rankings. Mm-hmm. Gongora has the IBO title. I know it's not really recognized as the big four, but it is a world title. It is, you know, the fifth one behind all the other major ones. And it's not like the IBO title hasn't been recognized in the past. Anthony Joshua fights for it. Triple G's fought for it. It's just, you know, collectively, there's a lot of politics in the game. And some sanctioning bodies and promoters are a lot closer together than others. So the IBO is kind of pushed out to the side. But I think, you know, do you think that if, for example, that matchup was made between Matchroom and Top Rank, between Berlanga and Gongora, do you think they would push it as a world title fight?
I would say so, because when you on that DAZN card, when Gongora was on there, Eddie Hearn was kind of, you know, talking it up like a world title. You know, he kind of admitted that it was like a lesser of the five, but yeah, he was still talking it up. But you know, he's a world class salesman.
No, yeah. But like you said, he acknowledged, like, hey, you know, it's the lesser of the five, but it's still a world title. I mean, why are the other world titles, WBA, WBC, WBO, IBF, you know, is it because the fans or is it because the marketing? Those titles are mostly the ones being pushed and marketed and advertised on these big television platforms, you know, DAZN, ESPN, Sky. Is that the difference, that they legitimize these world titles because they're on these, you know, they're on television markets like that, whereas the IBO doesn't get the same love?
Yeah, I would imagine it's the fact, you know, the WBA kind of aligns itself with Matchroom, and then obviously, you know, you see, like, you know, Anthony Joshua and all the Matchroom fighters.
But WBA aligns itself with the PBC as well.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the WBO is obviously more Top Rank and Frank Warren. WBC is Mexican fighters mainly, you know, it seems to be. Whereas, you know, the IBO really hasn't sold its soul to any one promoter and TV channel. So I think that's why it gets, you know, swept to the side, because they try to be a little bit more legitimate and go by their computerized rankings, similar to the IBF. So that's probably why, you know, you don't see you don't see your boxing heroes on Sky Sports holding that belt aloft. So that's probably why it's kind of been pushed to the side, because, you know, it is older than, you know, the WBO, which only came around in, what, 1985, 1986?
Right. Yeah. That's the interesting thing. A lot of people might not even know that. The IBO was there before the WBO. But, you know, like, going back to my original point, the television marketing and that aspect, especially when you link up with a reputable promoter, if they say, hey, look, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. We'll legitimize you by putting you all over TV, putting the belt on our fighters. It's going to legitimize you and you're going to get more recognition and more business. So, I mean, that's how it works. That's exactly how it works. So if the IBO had the opportunity with a partner like that, you can't tell me they wouldn't take it, you know, which it is what it is. It's a business. It's a business, you know, but you know, whatever. That's a good suggestion though. That would seem like a decent matchup. Maybe in the next two fights, Berlanga, Gongora for the IBO world title.
Yeah, I think Top Rank will probably do what they did with him last year and kind of wheel him out as much as they can, because I think they're obviously going to try to do a big, you know, Puerto Rican holiday extravaganza over in, you know, Madison Square Garden, wheeling out all of their Puerto Rican fighters for a big, I don't know, homecoming of such. So I'm sure he won't get anyone hard, maybe until then, or maybe even the fight after that, because it wouldn't be much of a homecoming, I guess, you know, if they stuck it in with someone really, really hard and he came unstuck. So,
right. Yeah. We'll see how he moves forward. But so far, so good. I know he didn't get the KO. His streak snapped, quote unquote, but he still got the win. He still got the win, and, you know, the stock isn't affected. He's still going forward. Also on that card, another prospect, Xander Zayas, gets the first round stoppage over DeMarcus Layton, who suffers the second loss of his career. I mean, you got to give it to Top Rank. I know we've touched on this before. The Top Rank, they have an eye for talent. They're able to over the years to really spot these guys who have some type of, you know, boxing ability. And then you put like the marketing machine of Top Rank and, for example, ESPN behind them. I mean, it works. I like this kid. I, you know, he's a young kid. He's what, 18, mm-hmm. 18, 19. He's a kid. He still has, I mean, look at that. Like, how old is Berlanga? 23?
Yeah. I think he's early 20s. Yeah.
I feel like Xander is going to get to 17-0 before he's like 20. But I mean, what'd you think about his matchup and his win?
Great prospect. You know, I picked him as my, you know, prospect for the year. Just everything you heard about him, you know, he goes in there, he was sparring people like Adrian Broner, George Kambosos was with him, but went before Kambosos fought Lee Selby, and he was singing the praises of him. Just kind of perfect. All the guys that you see, you know, the prospects coming through that get in there with the big names, for example, Zayas does it, you know, Virgil Ortiz used to do it, going around all the good gyms in the US, not scared to get in there and do a few rounds with, you know, guys that are probably light years ahead of you. You're probably going to get your ass whooped, but you're going to learn, right? So that's no, when you see the young kids like that who aren't too scared to do that, you know, Xander Zayas is only 18, but you know, when you see him interviewed and you see the way that he carries himself, he's like a 30-year-old seasoned veteran, you know, right. That's why when you see somebody like that, you have a lot, you put a lot of faith in them, because you know that they're not going to be overawed. They're not probably going to go away and, you know, drink and party and, you know, just love the money and stuff like that. Same as Virgil Ortiz, you know, like you speak to him, he's very sensible, laid back. And I think both of them are going to have unbelievable careers. I thought it was a great performance from Zayas. He likes to keep himself busy. You know, when he's not on the Top Rank cards, you can sometimes see him on some of the local shows down in Florida. And I just, you know, hopefully no injuries or anything like that. I think it's going to be probably his breakout year. You're hearing more and more people talk about him. You know, last year he kind of hit the scenes. More of boxing geeks like you and I kind of knew who he was. But he is definitely coming to more of the, you know, your general boxing fans are hearing that name.
And the kid's 5'10". 5'10", that's tall for a welterweight. It's 147 pounds. He fights at 147 pounds. And Layton, his opponent, who he stopped in the first round, he got the stoppage, is 6'2".
Just wait till we get to the PBC card.
Yeah, no, I know.
The Towering Inferno is on there.
Dude, I just don't understand, like, how do you make that weight? At 5'10", even at 5'10", but especially at 6'2".
I'm 6'3", and I haven't seen 147 since I was probably in high school.
You fat ass. But I mean, I'm always amazed, man. I'm always amazed. So, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to always see that, you know, like it, I don't know how these guys make 147 pounds. And then, you know, you're talking about the PBC card, the Towering Inferno is coming up. You know, he's like my height, and he makes that weight. So, which is crazy, because that's like 100 pounds difference for me, which is it's ridiculous. But yeah, like you mentioned, kind of repeating what you said, Xander Zayas just came on the scene. It's going to be a couple years before you're going to see him in any type of significant fight, any type of marquee fight. He's young. He's only 18. Build him up. Get him developing. You know, top ranks usually pretty decent with their matchups. And the kid's got the whole world ahead of him right now. So as long as he keeps winning, you know, it'll go good for him, like anybody in general, but it'll go good for him going forward. Moving on from the York Hall this past weekend in London on ESPN, Felix Cash remains undefeated with the third round stoppage over Denzel Bentley. Cash gains the British and Commonwealth middleweight championships. What did you think about Cash's stoppage?
I thought he's good. You know, he came out fast. Obviously, they had a little bit of a history together from a sparring contest a few years ago that, you know, kind of broke out into an actual fight. So they knew each other really well. I thought Cash did well, though, kind of jumped in him early. He had the more experience. Just heavy-handed. I thought he looked really good. Shot selection was good. I thought the stoppage by the referee was also good. I knew that some people kind of complained and thought it was a little bit early. But, you know, he took a few, you know, I think four or five, you know, really good clean shots, and he was kind of cowered against the ropes away from him. And I thought the stoppage was good. He was just going to really just take more punishment. I didn't think he really needed to. I think it was just the extra experience, the amateur pedigree that Felix had really just stood them apart. And I think, you know, maybe the fast start from Felix kind of threw Denzel off. But Denzel, you know, he can come again, you know, because he had a really good year last year. I think I picked him as my your kind of like British fighter of the year just because of the year.
And he's only 25. He's still young.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it just go away, back to the drawing board. You know, he hadn't had a huge amateur experience. Just go away, learn. And so, you know, instead of taking it as a loss, just take it as a learning opportunity and come again.
Right, right. And like you mentioned, you know, the British and Commonwealth middleweight titles. I mean, does every English fan, is that pretty consensus opinion that these belts are respected over there?
Yeah, you know, definitely, because I think people look at the lineage, especially of the British title. And, you know, just the way that it looks as well, you know, it looks kind of very similar to the Ring magazine. It has that old historical style. It's a really, you know, pretty looking belt. And obviously you just look at the lineage of the fighters that have held it before you. So a lot of people, they want to win it, you know, claim. I think it's 3 victories and you get to keep it. It used to be 5, but I believe it's now down. They changed it to 3.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
I think because, you know, nowadays people move on so quickly. You know, whereas back in the day, people would sit on the British title, defend it a few times. You know, people win it now and they're like, okay, European. Or they'll go on to like, you know, WBA Intercontinental. They kind of, you know, just a quick step before they move up. So, but yeah, I think it's, you know, definitely well respected in the UK.
Also on that card, Callum Johnson gets the second round stoppage over Emil Markic. This was for the vacant WBO global light heavyweight title. Global, is that better than world? I don't know. I think it is. I'm just going to start telling fighters when we see them at events or at their gyms, like, hey, man, just call out the global world champion. It's the same thing, man. You know, as long as you push it, you market it the right way, there's another world title right there. What'd you think about Johnson's second round stoppage?
He's just great to watch, Johnson. You know, you could see he'd obviously been out the ring for, you know, 25 months, you know, crazy amount of
2 years, damn.
Right? It's a crazy amount of time to be out the ring. You could see as soon as the bell went, he pretty much just ran over there and just, you know, wanted to go toe-to-toe with Markic. You know, Markic did catch him. I think it was at the end of the first, and you could see that Johnson's legs kind of went. And, you know, I think Joe Gallagher was probably tearing his hair out. The fact that I think Johnson didn't stick to any kind of game plan and just wanted to really just get in there. And, you know, I think he openly said he wanted to get in there and just blow him out as fast as he could compared to, you know, other people that had been in there with him, just to kind of outdo them and kind of, you know, make a bit of a statement. You know, he's 35 years old. His only loss is to Beterbiev, who he actually dropped but eventually lost to. This was obviously for the WBA Global, like you said, which obviously makes him up there as one of the contenders for Joe Smith Jr. But I think everybody's, you know, kind of expecting Justin Jr. to fight Beterbiev, and maybe after that, you know, he gets the winner. Maybe he gets, you know, Joe Smith Jr. if he loses. But either way, any of those matchup would be outstanding. Joe Smith Jr., Beterbiev, Callum Johnson, just do a round robin of those, and us fans will be drooling at the prospect of seeing those guys all fight each other.
What's more likely, that Joe Smith fights Beterbiev next for unification matchup, or he fights Callum Johnson next?
I would imagine Joe Smith fights Beterbiev for a unification. I think that's probably what he wants. You know,
that's a logical plan, right? I mean,
the only reason I would imagine that anyone would choose a different route instead of, you know, obviously, you know, trying to unify would be if, you know, Frank Warren just came to the table with a huge wedge of cash that was, you know, substantially more than he would get for fighting Beterbiev.
Maybe. I mean, Bivol fights this upcoming weekend. We're going to touch on that fight. Then you got Joe Smith Jr., who also has a title. Beterbiev. Who else are we missing? Or did Beterbiev has two?
Yeah, he has two, yeah.
He has two. So between those three guys, they have all the major world titles. So, I mean, yeah, I hope Smith and Beterbiev do fight. But like you said, Callum Johnson, and all these guys too, I think Bivol might be the youngest one, but at least Beterbiev, Smith, and Callum Johnson, they're all in like their mid-30s, aren't they?
Yeah, Bivol's the youngest. You know, he can kind of wait around and pick them all off, I would imagine. You know, just the problem he's had is, you know, getting the right fights at the right time, because, you know, he doesn't bring a lot of money to the table. He doesn't really bring a lot of fans to the table because he's kind of a quiet guy, and he's good.
Right. Right. Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see. It'd be good to see a round robin between those guys, especially Joe Smith, Beterbiev, Callum Johnson. I mean, they're all on the ESPN-ish top rank association, Frank Warren. So between those three at the moment, Johnson, Beterbiev, and Smith Jr., it would seem like it'd be a lot easier to make those matchups. It's Bivol that's on the outside. And Bivol, poor Bivol, he already has a tough time to get all these guys in the ring. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Friday, the 30th of April, once again from the York Hall in London on the Plus, ESPN Plus here in the United States. All right, Mike, take this one. How do you pronounce the name?
I actually was watching the interviews today. I think it's Marathi Malathan.
Marathi Malathan. Okay, I'm going with that. 39-2 goes up against Sonny Edwards. This is for the IBF flyweight world title. Flyweight action. What do you think about this matchup?
I think it'll be a good matchup. You know, Marathi has been a kind of a legend, really, I would say, in the flyweight division, been a champion for a long, long time. Nobody really ever really wanted to fight him. You know, no one really gets great paydays in and around the flyweight division. Sonny Edwards kind of stepped up to the challenge, wanted to fight some of the better guys in the flyweight division. You know, he talks a lot, brings kind of eyes to that division if he manages to pick up the title. I think it's going to be a hard test for him. I think if Sonny does it, he's going to, unfortunately, it will be a very boring, you know, stick and move, and which is, you know, Sonny Edwards' normal style. He has a very amateur style. And I think that's probably his path to victory. It would be a, you know, just a stick and move, and a lopsided points decision, since he's the, you know, he's the challenger, but it's a Frank Warren card. So he's technically the home fighter, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. Also on that card, Michael Conlan goes up against I can't say that. How do you say this?
I would say just say Baluta, his last name. It's two.
Baluta? Yeah, against Baluta. Michael Conlan. Would you still consider Michael Conlan a prospect? I would.
In terms of the amount of fights he's had, maybe not in terms of his age. I think he's actually slightly older than he looks.
Yeah.
But this is a good step up for him. I think, you know, early on in his career, he was a little bit boring, but in his last fight, when he fought Sofiane Takuch, I think it is, he got the TKO victory, and also a TKO victory over Diego Albert Ruiz two fights before that. This should be a good fight for him, I would have said. May go the whole distance. You know, Baluta's been in there, was, you know, on a few you know, British cards against like TJ Dahini, David Oliver Joyce, got victories over both of those. It was a surprise victory over, you know, TJ Dahini. I think Dahini kind of picked him to try and get back into the win column and was upset. Bulut's been defeated, but never been knocked out. So this could be a points victory for Conlan.
I think Conlan soon needs to get some type of marquee name or some type of big fight or somebody who's comparable in talent to him to be across the ring from him. Because he's been signed, I believe, since like, what, 2016? I believe, with Top Rank, right after the Olympics, right?
Yeah, right after the Olympics. And I think early on he was, maybe a bit harsh saying it, but a bit of a gimmick. You know, they'd always kind of like roll him out for St. Patrick's Day, you know, use him in New York to get the fans into the thing. And I would have said, like, in his last few fights since he fought Diego Alberto Ruiz, he's kind of come out, seems to have found a little bit of power. Obviously got that, the revenge win over Vladimir Nikitin from the amateur scene. But yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think he kind of needs to fight more people we know, because, you know, fighting Kenny Guzman, Jarrett Owen, David Burner, Nicola Cipolletta, Dos Santos, nobody, we don't know who they are. None of them. You know, like, even fighting some kind of like British level fighters that are like local names that we kind of know, and, you know, picking up a British title, beating those guys. But he's fighting loads of journeymen, technically. You know, they have winning records, but they're fighting it, you know.
Who do you think is more well known right now at this point, Berlanga or Conlan?
That's hard, because, you know, in the UK, obviously Conlan's known, and Conlan is probably known to a lot of boxing fans for flipping the bird at the referees or the judges at the Olympics. So I'd probably go with Conlan.
Really? That's interesting. I'd probably, maybe. I could see that. I could see that. But I don't know. I think it's a lot closer than people think in terms of like notoriety and, you know, attention on them. But yeah, I think he needs some type of opponent, or at least somebody who's going to give him a fight. Even if they can't get like an actual, any type of name, at least put him in there with somebody who's going to give him a fight and could potentially give him his first loss. Cause yeah, I feel like we're coming up on 5 years. I know last year was a pandemic, so it was a hard year, but, you know, 4 or 5 years or something like that he's been signed. That's a long time, especially when you're signed to a major boxing promoter and you've been on these significant television platforms. Yeah, I think he needs to hit the gas pedal a little bit, because I think, isn't he almost 30, or is he in his 30s?
He's 29, but I agree, because sometimes you get to that point in your career where you've kind of been given soft touches as such, but you've picked up a lot of points in the rankings divisions because you fought for, you know, intercontinental belts, you fought for European belts, so you picked up a lot of points. So you end up being in the top 15 of the ranking, which makes you eligible for, you know, to fight for the world title in a voluntary defense. But you're going from fighting D-level fighters to technically fighting an A-level or B-level fighter, you know, which is kind of the slippery slope that I see Conlan on, because, you know, he's actually ranked fairly highly in a lot of the rankings, just because he's picked up these points. But, you know, he's in a, you know, a hard weight category. Like, can you see him just jumping from fighting those no names that we've said to Stephen Fulton, Luis Neri, Ronnie Rios, MJ, Brandon Figueroa, Danny Roman? No, I can't, not personally.
I think he's the underdog against all those guys you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. He's big for the weight division, so fighting someone small like a Danny Roman.
Right.
Danny Roman has been fighting solid opposition.
No. I agree with that.
For the last 3 or 4 years. He doesn't look great, Danny Roman, and I've said, you know, many times on this, I've gone against him and I've met the guy, lovely chap and stuff like that, but he's just a workhorse. He just puts in the work and he goes to the body, nothing flash, but it works and he gets results.
The baby-faced assassin, Danny Roman. But yeah, he needs somebody. So hopefully, at least if not in the next fight, in the next two fights, you need somebody across the ring from him to give him some type of fight. Moving on, this upcoming Saturday, the 1st of May, from the Manchester Arena on DAZN, Derek Wachezora returns 32-10 against Joseph Parker. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, especially in London or in England over there, this is actually anticipated to be a pretty entertaining matchup, right?
I think it should be. Whether it should be pay-per-view in the UK is, a different matter. You know, the fact that Chisora lost his last fight against Usyk and then goes on to headline a pay-per-view card is kind of amazing. But that's another story in itself, right?
Before you dive into the matchup, how does something like that happen? Because obviously we have our pay-per-view market over here. We complain and this and that, and are the money, it's too expensive. But for something like that, a guy coming off a loss over there, is it pretty much like the same thing as it is everywhere else in boxing, where these guys demand a purse so big that you need to put it on pay-per-view to at least try to pay for the event?
I think so. I think Eddie kind of said that he wanted to do this was the card that he was, talking about on an IFL TV interview for months about how he was going to have a huge, like, Easter card. And, this is it. Chisora, Parker, probably decent paydays for both of those guys. Bivol and Craig Richards, I'm sure Bivol's purse is substantial. Katie Taylor and Natasha Jonas, I'm sure Katie Taylor's purse is substantial. So they probably, did need, pay-per-view revenue to really, pay all of them. I'm sure he has fight dates for, a lot of guys that he needs to schedule, and he probably needed the helping hand of a pay-per-view. But it's one of those things where you look at it. I think Eddie said before, when he did a pay-per-view card, I can't remember which one it was, and, people were kind of complaining about it. And I think he said something like, well, it sold 300,000 buys, so it must be pay-per-view. And I'm like, I can kind of see where you're coming from. But at the same time, maybe people just want to watch it, so they have to pay for it. So, it depends what your class is pay-per-view, I guess. Look at Andy Ruiz and Chris Arreola. That's pay-per-view.
Yeah, we're coming up to that as well. But yeah, we got two pay-per-view fights, main events this upcoming weekend, this Saturday, on opposite sides of the world, essentially, that a lot of people feel shouldn't be on pay-per-view, but it is what it is. But kind of going back to the matchup, Chisora versus Parker, what do you think about it?
I think it'll be a good fight. Chisora seems to, since kind of, I don't know, whether taking boxing more seriously, change of trainer, having David Hay, like, helping him in camp and, kind of been motivated. I think if you look at his last, I thought the Dillon White fights and the Usyk fight, he lost the Usyk fight, but he gave good performances, I thought. He stuck to that. He only really has one game plan, pretty much just walk you down and try to catch you.
He's like a bull.
He used to come in sometimes kind of flat, fat. He would hug so much because he wasn't fit. He's a little bit more motivated, probably because he's getting those paydays, and the finish line has to be close for him. I think it should be a good fight. Joseph Parker, I was kind of looking back on his resume, and I'm starting to wonder if is he overrated? Because if you look back at his, some of his performances, Andy Ruiz could have technically have lost that if it wasn't over in New Zealand. Huey Fury, majority decision. Some people thought that, maybe Huey Fury could have won that if he'd have thrown a few more punches. For AJ, terrible performance. AJ just kind of stood on the outside, and Joseph Parker didn't want to commit because it just looked like he didn't want to get knocked out. Dillon White, okay, I give him that. If there was a couple more rounds, or maybe even like an extra minute in that 12th round, he could have got, Dillon White out of there because he kind of looked out on his feet. I think I was ringside for one of them. I can't remember which one it was. It's either Shaundell Winters or Flores, where he came in. He got the victory, but he kind of looked fat, looked slow. I thought his performance against Junior Farr last time out, that wasn't convincing. He didn't look good in that one. Maybe a lot of those performances are down to the fact, that he kind of got stale with Kevin Barry and that's why he left. Or is it just down to the fact that, he made some money kind of early on in his career and now he doesn't want it? The old thing from Rocky where, he became civilized. And because if you do watch him, sometimes you sit there and he doesn't jump on people to get them out there. He's like, like a broner. He's kind of got the broner syndrome where he just kind of wants to get through the 12 rounds and, he'll take the money. And, if he wins, he wins. But if he doesn't, he's still getting paid. He just doesn't want to get knocked out.
That's a good comparison. The whole Broner analogy, because that's exactly how I thought about it. I just couldn't think of somebody to compare him to like that. But I agree 100% with that analogy, because I feel like that's how he is. I mean, he's not really like a knockout artist. There's not really one fight that if you had to think is it stands out in your mind for him, memorable wise, at least to me, there's not really one fight that stands out. But he was a world champion. He did hold the WBO heavyweight title for a bit, until AJ took it from him. And he's been in there with decent names. So I think he is better than a lot of the other heavyweights. I think he is. But he could be a little bit overrated, but I wouldn't go necessarily that far. I think he does have talent. Let's just put him in there with somebody. I mean, Chisora, just because the like you mentioned, the last couple of performances that Chisora's had, could make this interesting, at least entertaining. At least it would pose some type of threat to Parker. So we'll see. But I feel like Chisora's, in terms of comparing him, like you compared Parker to Broner, would Chisora be the King Gabriel Zotto of the heavyweight division at the moment?
I would say so, but if you look at them both, I would say that Chisora weirdly is the guy that's actually on, even though he's coming off a victory, coming off a loss, sorry, is the guy that's in form. I don't see, Parker's last fight against Junior Farr. Some people had him losing that fight. And then before that, he fought, Sean Del Winters at the start, just before the pandemic. Obviously, he got the TKO victory there. But, Chisora's kind of been active, be good, in form, kind of looks hungry. Whereas, we kind of touched on, I think Parker really is just now there, is just turns up for the payday and, uses his social media quite a lot, puts up those funny videos to kind of keep himself relevant, and the guys like him. I think the US fans like him. Obviously, over in Australia and New Zealand love him, and the fans in the UK like him. So he's doing something right.
I wish we would have been able to see a fight between Chisora and Shannon the Cannon Briggs. Imagine that matchup.
Imagine the press conference.
That's the only reason I would want to see it. That's the only reason I would want to see it. It sucks that we're never going to see something like that. Oh, you never know. But
right.
In terms of like both being in their prime and with the smack talk that they each do and how they come about in their press conferences and all that stuff, it would have been pretty entertaining. Moving on, Dimitri Bivol, the WBA light heavyweight world champion at 175 pounds, 17-0, goes up against Craig Richards, 16-1-1. Going back to what I said earlier, Bivol has already had and experienced a very difficult time in getting significant names, even being a world champion, into the ring with him. And all the major players right now, at least the guys who are kind of playing likely to go round robin, like you said, are Joe Smith Jr., top rank. Artur Beterbiev, top rank-ish, ESPN, stuff like that. Callum Johnson's obviously his name is in there, so he's going to probably be able to get a shot at one of them. Dimitri Bivol over there on DAZN, he also hasn't fought, I don't even know how many months, maybe close to 2 years or less than that. It's been a long time. And I like Bivol. I honestly think Bivol, if you ask me, pending on what he looks like this weekend, but if you just had to, we just had to judge everybody based on their last couple of fights, I think Bivol beats everybody at 175 pounds. I mean, am I wrong?
That's a good question. I think the fight with him and Beterbiev would literally be like, a boxer versus a heavy-handed slugger. One of those fights kind of where You know, like a Deontay Wilder against, you know, Tyson Fury, where, you know, Tyson Fury has to be, you know, perfect for 12 rounds, whereas, you know, Beterbiev just has to be perfect for that 2 seconds where he throws something and manages to catch you. It's going to be interesting to see whether we see any change in his style since he's joined the rest of the guys and they're all training with, you know, Joel Diaz now over in India. So will we see him, you know, sit down on his punches a little bit more? Because we know, you know, Joel likes kind of like the heavy-handed fighters. So should be interested to see. Good run out for him. Like you said, he hasn't fought since 2019 when he fought Lennon Castillo. Kind of stunk the place out in that fight. Kind of feel for him, you know, because he's just one of those guys. He's very, very talented, but just kind of like we touched on earlier, he doesn't bring a lot to the table in terms of, you know, monetary value and fans. He doesn't have like a big social media following. He's kind of very quiet, you know, keeps himself to himself type of personality. So he's
there's nothing wrong with that in a sense, but
if he's knocking fools out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, but he's in that tough spot, and we've seen it time and time again with different fighters, and we're still going to see it going forward as long as boxing's alive. Which it is. Boxing is not dead, so we're never having that conversation. But he's in that weird limbo where he's high risk, low reward, you know? So it's like, you know, I think I can beat him, but he is tough and it's not worth the payday. You know, like that's how people kind of look at it. A lot of fighters, I mean, obviously you want to get paid because if you take a loss, especially on a big platform, television platform or whatever, like, oh man, a one loss could derail your career financially. So, I mean, yeah, the only thing he can do is just keep winning, you know, but he could, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if all these other guys just kind of don't fight him until he just gets older and older, or when he shows in that one fight, maybe it could be this weekend where he shows in that one fight that he's like, oh, is he losing it? You know, what's wrong with him? Oh, maybe I should fight him now. I can take his belt. You know, it looks like he's lost a lot of skill or ability. I mean, you never know. You never know. So, but I like him. I like him. I think he is the best guy, arguably, at 175 pounds if you put him in there against these other guys. I really think so. I really think so. But, I mean, is he going to get the chance anytime soon? It doesn't seem like it. He's just going to have to keep fighting. I mean, that's probably why he took so long. It took so long to schedule a fight for them, because I could imagine that. Well, he's technically signed to Matchroom, right?
Yeah, he had a contract with Matchroom and DAZN. Yeah, I mean, yeah. When I was at Joel Diaz's gym, you know, I was chatting to the manager, and he was telling me about, you know, offers that they'd made to like Callum Smith and you know, several other fighters in and around that weight division, and you know, all of them just turned it down. And we're talking millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I feel like Dimitri Bivol and his team are at the point where they're just like, okay, we'll offer you more money to fight him because we need an opponent. We need somebody to legitimize his resume. And they still turn it down. I mean, it's just like, wow, you know, especially now that like Canelo is technically at 168 pounds, which could be 175 pounds. You know, he's around that weight class. These guys around that weight class are just like, well, you know, if I can get Canelo, you know, if there's a chance I can get him, why am I going to go after somebody who's such a high risk like Bivol and not get the same payday? I'd rather go somebody who's a high risk like Canelo and get paid for it, you know? So, yeah, I think Bivol's in a tough spot, man. And like you said, like you talked to his manager at Joel Diaz's boxing gym in Indio, California, here in Southern California, but he's right. You know, they offered all this money, millions of dollars to these opponents, and they still declined. I mean, what are you supposed to do after that? What are you supposed to do? And you don't think...
I'm talking, if he was telling me the truth, like multiple millions, and I was shocked.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. I mean, obviously you want to offer people less and stuff like that, but if you see they're not taking the fight, you got to up the price. You got to up the price. And I'm sure Eddie Hearn's gotten involved. And Eddie Hearn's already shown that he's a very good negotiator. He's able to make fights cross platform and, you know, whatever. He was like, yeah, I'm losing money on this event, but, you know, these fighters needed opponents. And you just can't get a fight for the guy. A significant opponent is what I'm saying. I like Bivol too, and I hope he gets his chance to be across the ring from somebody else, hopefully another world champion, but he's in a very tough spot. And I feel like he's been in that tough spot for quite a while now. And it doesn't seem like there's any light at the end of the tunnel anytime soon. But moving on that card, James Tennyson, 28-3, goes up against Giovanni Straffin for the vacant IBO lightweight title. What do you think about this matchup?
Was it the British Gervonta Davis? Isn't that what Johnny Nelson from Sky Sports called him? You know, IBO title showing up again on Eddie Hearn card. So interesting. We're going to see some more of those popping up all over since, I don't know, the last couple of months, we seem to have seen an emergence of him. But, I mean, it should be a good fight. You know, James Tennyson, very heavy-handed. I don't know too much about Giovanni Straffin, but, you know, he's in there for this vacant IBO lightweight title, so he must have some kind of pedigree if using the IBO computerized standings. You know, a lot of the time they have to beat somebody of some kind of substance to really get themselves up and around those title challenges. But, you know, it should be a good fight for James Tennyson to, you know, look good, you know, show that he has got those heavy hands and, you know, move on to something bigger and better with a small, you know, world title in his hands.
Rounding off that card, Katie Taylor, 17-0, defends her WBC, WBA, IBF, and WBO lightweight world titles against Natasha Jonas. I've read and I've heard that this should be a pretty interesting fight. Am I right?
It should be. Obviously, they have some previous from the amateurs, but unfortunately for Natasha, they've, instead of giving her the Terry Harper rematch, they, you know, gave her the Katie Taylor fight where she's stepping up in weight. You know, is that really going to go against her when she's fighting somebody of, you know, Katie Taylor's, you know, pedigree of how good she's been? I think Katie Taylor will win. You know, Tasha Jonas may have a good showing on the night. You know, last time out, she looked very good against, you know, Terry Harper and, you know, arguably may have won that fight. So, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, Eddie Hearn's kind of given her something like another payday, another big fight for the, you know, the chance to be the undisputed, the lightweight, arguably the biggest and best female fighter on the planet. So, you know, Eddie Hearn gave her something. You know, whether or not she can take the victory, I personally doubt it. You know, I'd like to see Katie Taylor, you know, win this and then hopefully, you know, manage to chase down Amanda Serrano. And then after that, really, she's completed it. She's nowhere else to really fight. Maybe the rematch with Jessica McCaskill, because, you know, that victory is now looking kind of outstanding because, you know, she beat McCaskill then went on to, you know, beat Cecilia Breakers twice. So maybe fight her. You know, maybe she's come along on a lot since that time that they fought. So she's really kind of emptied out that, you know, that weight category. And, you know, Christian Shields is just too big. You know, that fight is kind of more of a fantasy fight than anything.
Moving on, this upcoming Saturday as well, from the Dignity Health Sports Park, formerly the StubHub Center in Carson, California, which is Los Angeles County here in Southern California. On Fox Pay-Per-View, Andy Ruiz Jr., former Unified Heavyweight World Champion, goes up against Chris the Nightmare Areola in an all-Mexican showdown. I hope that because historically, when you put Mexicans against each other, even Mexicans, Puerto Ricans or whatever, like a Barrera Morales, typically because of the lineage of the fighters that came before them, you know, Mexican style, typically there's good entertainment. I hope that this fight shows at least some of that, at least some of that. Them both being Mexican. Chris Ariel has been around for a long time. Obviously, he's tried a couple times to try to get the heavyweight championship of the world, but it just didn't work out. Andy Ruiz Jr. beat him to it years later with his crazy global recognized win over Anthony Joshua in 2019. Andy Ruiz Jr. is obviously the favorite here. He's got the faster hands, the better boxing ability. But the reason why I don't want to say I expect, but I'm leaning towards hoping, if that makes sense, that this is going to be a, you know, a better fight than most expect, is because Chris Areola, if people don't remember, the last time he fought was in New York when he fought against the babyface Adam Kownacki, Kaunaki. I believe you say it that way or one way or the other, so I apologize. What happened there? According to CopyBox, they threw the most punches in heavyweight history.
I think it might have just been history.
Was it? Are you sure? It might have been. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it was something outrageous. Like, wasn't just heavyweight. I think it was the most punches thrown.
So, because of that, and because Areola is training with Joe Goosen now, out here in Los Angeles, I'm hoping that there's moments of just like, oh wow, that's what we're looking for. And Chris Areola, I think, is the bigger guy in terms of height and all that stuff. But you know, if they give us some entertainment, especially being here in Southern California, the StubHub Center or whatever it's called now, Dignity Health, Home Depot Center, all these names it used to be called, is an outdoor arena. I think they're letting in what, maybe 30%?
Something like that, yeah.
30% of spectators or the audience or something like that. So I'm hoping it's a decent matchup. I don't agree that it should have been pay-per-view, but obviously if Andy Ruiz Jr. never beat Anthony Joshua and became Unified World Champion, his stock shot up and his purse demands shot up, which is great for him. You know, nobody's complained about that. This would have never been pay-per-view. This would have been just like a standalone Showtime or maybe a standalone Fox Showdown, or maybe a co-main event to a bigger PBC fighter or a bigger PBC marketed fighter. But because Andy Ruiz Jr. became the Unified Heavyweight World Champion and so much attention was put on him after the AJ win, obviously his purse demand went up. But I'm hoping it's a good matchup. I'm picking Ruiz. You know what? Do I want to say by stoppage? Because Ariel has been knocked out by like Stavern, Klitschko. Was he knocked out by Klitschko or was that a decision?
I can't remember. That was a while ago.
Yeah, it was like 2009, 2010 or something like that. Wilder, a couple years ago in 2016, 2015, 2016, he was knocked out. But I honestly think this whole fight goes 12 rounds. I really do. Obviously, there's a chance that Ruiz knocks him out, so especially knocks him down. But I don't know. I'm just hoping for the best because both of these guys are both Mexican, and you know they have that Mexican blood, and then they say Mexican style, and you got historically in boxing, Mexican is a, you know, you have that expectation. I'm hoping they deliver some type of entertaining matchup. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, looking at it, you know, from the pictures in camp, it could have been a sloppy fight. You know, both of them are prone to, you know, enjoying the buffet a little bit too much. But looking at the pictures, you know, Andy Ruiz looks in great shape. He's shred, I think like 30 or 40 pounds. Chris Areola as well looks in great shape, you know, in training with, you know, Joe Goosen. So, you know, physically, I think they're in there. I think you're going to be able to see a lot of punches, you know. I think Andy Ruiz wins. I think I'm going to go stoppage, 6, 7, 8 rounds, something like that, towards the end of the fight. I think he's just going to be too skillful for him. You know, Chris Areola, you know, throws a lot of punches. Looks like he's actually in shape for once. So, you know, we could see, you know, punches in bunches for several rounds until I think, you know, Ruiz catches him kind of late on and, you know, takes the victory and then onwards to, you know, something bigger, you know, later down the line. Problem is, all the world titles are kind of, you know, already matched up for several fights. Obviously, you've got the Tyson Fury, Joshua fight, if that goes ahead, then the second fight. And then obviously you've got Usyk, Joe Joyce, and then the winner of that's going to obviously pick up the WBO. So where does that leave, you know, the winner of this fight? Because I'm sure, you know, Reed is hoping to win and, you know, trying to jump straight back into the picture whilst he's still got a, you know,
I would say Wilder. I think Wilder, especially if he fights in the next 3-4 months, then you can put the winner of this fight, which is likely to be Ruiz, against Wilder. Because like you said, all the belts are over there with Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua. So you need something.
Fight.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fight that people have been talking about. Like, okay, we'll put them together. You know, that's an intriguing matchup. You know, they're, you know, two of the top five heavyweights in the world, arguably. So might as well put them together. But
Dillian Whyte, I know that Eddie was saying in recent interviews he wanted to bring him over here for like a USA showcase fight and then eventually fight someone big over here. So I'd imagine a little touch up against somebody and then like a Ruiz or a Wilder, you know, later down the line.
Hopefully. But, you know, promotional politics, we're not going down that rabbit hole again. Also on this card, Arizlandi Lara, former world champion at 154 pounds, goes up against Thomas Lamana. And this is for the vacant WBA middleweight world title. It's vacant? The WBA middleweight world title is vacant? Or is this just another promotional politic of Al Haymon and the PBC to get a world title attached to this fight?
Yeah, it's one of those where, you know, I think they elevated, you know, and then you have the WBA super champion, and then they have the you know, WBA champion, and then obviously WBA regular and WBA interim. So you know, they're just giving, you know, Lara a chance to become, what is it? Is it a third world title in two different weight classes? If he manages to pick up the victory in this one, obviously Lara was a longtime champion at the 154 division until he came up against the giant in Jarrett Hurd. So
that was a great fight too.
Yeah, I was actually at that fight. It was actually at the old Hard Rock Hotel in Vegas. Obviously,
I thought it was the Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, it was at the old Hard Rock, which obviously is now the Virgin Hotel.
Yeah, the Virgin. Speaking of Virgin hotels, like they're getting quite a few fights now. Top Rank supposed to have Josh Taylor and Jose Ramirez there, and you know, I'm assuming they're gonna try to entice more fights to be at their locations. So, but
that was the same card as James DeGale and Caleb Truax, the rematch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was the Mandalay Bay, maybe. Yeah, I guess I was just not remembering it right. Also on that card, the Towering Inferno, as I mentioned earlier, Sebastian Fundura, 16-0-1, goes up against the 30-4 Jorge Cota. What do you think about this matchup?
Sebastian Fundura is just great to watch. You know, he's what, 6'7"? What is he? 6 foot.
Yeah. We're the same height. I think we're the same height.
Yeah, he's 6'7", boils himself down to, 147 pounds. And he's just great because he doesn't use any of that height. He just fights.
No, he doesn't.
No, he fights up close. Dude,
I don't understand how he makes that weight. We talked about that earlier. I don't understand it. I really don't.
I think it'll be for a short period of time. I think he's going to have to move up. I just think genetically, you know, he's going to fill out over time as he gets older. And, he could end up being something like a super middleweight, light heavyweight, even a cruiserweight, technically even a heavyweight if he ate into it.
Yeah, he could make it all the way up to heavyweight. Right. Like with that, I mean, Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua are about the same height, 6'6", 6'7". And they each weigh what Wilder weighs. He goes back from like 209 to like 235. Anthony Joshua goes like a 240, 250. He could be like a Manny Pacquiao before his career is over, where he spans 6, 7, 8 weight classes. He could. 154, 1, 162, 168, 3, 175, 4, 200, what is it? Cruiserweight?
Bridgerweight?
Bridgerweight? Oh, shit. I forgot about that one now. Heavyweight. So there you go. He could. With the frame, if he's able to bulk up and carry that weight up, that'd be impressive, man. That'd be very, very impressive. But, I mean, we'll see. But he gets a lot of attention. He gets a ton of attention because of his height and because of the weight he's at. But I think as he starts moving up as he starts getting his record more wins under his belt, I think he's kind of going to be in a similar situation as Bivol, where he's going to have a tough time getting these decent names because he's so tall. You know, it's one thing to fight a guy that's 6'1", 6'2", like Canelo did with Kovalev or Callum Smith or something like that. And you're 5'8", 5'9", or whatever. But it's another thing when you add another 4 or 5 inches to a guy, 6'7", and you're what, 5'8"? Yeah, that's a huge difference. That's a huge difference. But who knows? Who knows? But he's definitely a novelty act at the moment. You know, a lot of people like to see him, and it's interesting. Even the casual viewers like, what the hell? This guy's that tall and he makes that weight. It's intriguing. It's intriguing, and it works. It works for that television shock value, especially. Also on the card, Omar Figueroa Jr., 28-1-1, goes up against Abel Ramos. What do you think about this matchup?
Good to see Omar Figueroa back, really. You know, he's a good fighter. Obviously, had a few legal issues away from, you know, I think it was multiple drink driving offenses that he had. Hasn't fought since he lost to Ordanis Ugas in July 2019. So it'll be good to see him back. I think he's still training with Joel Diaz. So, you know, he'll doesn't really take much shit. So he'll probably whip him into shape, make sure he's kind of like on it. You know, still got only got that one loss on his record. Obviously used to be the WBC champion back in the day. So it's just really how much does he want it now? You know, has he still got that drive to come again? Or does he just come back for a few easy paydays and then he just kind of, you know, sails off into the sunset? You know, obviously his brother's doing really well, holds one of the WBA belts in Brandon Figueroa.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. But glad he's back. Like you said, he did have a couple legal issues in his life, but looks like he's back in the ring, and hopefully that's all behind him. Moving on, the news and notes of the show. Triller, I wanted to touch on this. Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports, friend of the show, reported that Triller filed in the Central District of California, filed lawsuits against all these illegal streaming platforms. I looked at some of the paperwork, some of the documents, where it says that they have all these websites. There's like 5 or 6 different websites. Crack streams this, and then it says right out like comma an unknown business. I think that should tell you like everything you know. Like, are they actually going to be able to find these guys? Mm. That's the thing. Like, and even if you do, you know these people, whoever's running these illegal streams, you know they're not in the United States. They're not. So, I mean, is this more of a scare tactic from Triller, or do they really believe they're going to try to recoup these millions of dollars that they're listing in this complaint, this legal complaint?
I think it's more of a scare tactic to hoping to, you know, put people off doing it in the future. And the streams are free. So the guy that's running it is probably not going to be making much money from it because the streams are free. So, you know, say if he does it to me or you, and they're like, hey, you now owe us $20 million. You can pay me at like $1 a week for the rest of your life. They're not going to recoup anything. That's the problem. It's just a scare tactic to hope that, you know, if me or you decided to start an illegal stream, that, you know, we'll think again. Same as, you know, Dana White doing it when he was going after those people that, you know, he said like, hey, I know who you are. If you do it on Saturday, we've got people watching your house.
Dana White said recently in an interview, I forgot which one it was, but he had said that the UFC spends millions of dollars to combat illegal streaming for each event, you know, or in a total year. Like, he's like, we spend a lot of money to fight against it. And he had heard, or he was told, that Triller didn't really spend any money to fight the illegal streaming for this last event, Jake Paul and Ben Askren. Because they had asked him about the pay-per-view numbers or something, and he said that he didn't believe what it was being reported, that's not actually what it sold. I mean, maybe it's sour grapes from Dana White, or I don't know what it is, but do you think he's telling the truth? Do you think, and he's not the first one to say that. There's been other people in the boxing world or in the MMA world who have said that Triller might be inflating their numbers a little bit. But that's the thing with all these pay-per-view numbers in general, not just Triller, but we don't really know. We don't really know what the actual number is. We just kind of have to believe it.
No, exactly. You know, why wouldn't you overinflate it if it's doing, you know, your company? And, you know, you tell like a Mike Coppinger, who's kind of well-respected, like, hey, just so you know, it was like 1.8 million in the end. You know, Mike Coppinger's going to think it's legit. He's going to, you know, message it out on Twitter and, you know, we just take it as gospel. So, yeah, like you said, it's not free information that we can get and that we can check on. So we obviously just always go off, you know, the figures that they give us, and it's obviously a ballpark figure. It could be slightly more, it could be slightly less. So,
well, it's just like going back to Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports. He had told us in a past episode that it's a lot more difficult to really get a solid number because the digital age, digital streams, are also included now, and you know, it's all over the place. So not only do you got like linear TV, you know, traditional pay-per-view on an actual television, cable, satellite, but you got the digital stuff, and which is probably a lot, you get that number a lot faster, I'm assuming. But he said it's a lot more difficult to pinpoint what the number is, you know, because there's so many different ways to watch. So yeah, I think how I look at it is that if the actual platform releases the number, like officially, and they say, hey, or somebody, some executive from that place goes on the record or somewhere and says it, then it has to be around there. The number has to be around whatever they're reporting. It's probably inflated, but they're at least close enough where they're like, oh, we could say this. Because you got to look at it. Anytime numbers have been reported, it's because they know they performed well. Like when DAZN got Canelo and he fought on DAZN for the first time, they said it was I forgot which event it was. Immediately after, not soon after, they released that they got a million viewers to his first fight on DAZN or something like that. Or, you know, or even with the Chavez Jr. fight, when he fought Chavez Jr., that broke a million pay-per-view buys. And I think they released it officially, and then they acknowledged it, and they're like, yeah, yeah, you know, it just shows, I think De La Hoya acknowledged, like, yeah, it just shows that Canelo's the biggest star in boxing. Well, Chavez Jr. obviously helped because of his name, but if you don't see, like, somebody release it that's in some type of official capacity on the actual platform or the promoter, or at least say some type of number, then, you know, can you really believe it? You know, is it better to just shut your mouth the entire time, you know, and keep it low, even if you did do well? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You know, I think obviously when they do well, it's like anything in it, people will, they'll announce it because, you know, it's done better than expected and they want everybody to know, like, you know, this is how popular this fight was, blah, blah, blah. You know, if it doesn't do, you know, outstanding numbers or it does less than expected, you know, then you never hear anything. So,
right.
It's understandable. You know, I can see the reasonings behind it. You know, it's probably why, like Eddie Hearn said, is like the DAZN just aren't going to announce them ever because, you know, no, what use is it? You know, people are just going to slate them regardless. So.
No, it's true. It's true. I think that's probably the best way, is just to keep it under wraps. Mm. You know, I think they learned after the Canelo, because I think I'm pretty sure they announced it officially after Canelo got them past like a million viewers, subscribers, or something like that. I know they were proud of it, and we can Google it and find it. But moving on, your favorite of mine, Ryan the Flash King Rai Garcia. The past couple of days, we recently announced on his social media that he is not going to be fighting in July against Javier Fortuna. He had said something along the lines of, you know, his health and he was having some issues. I've seen a lot of different opinions on this. I've seen a lot of different opinions from not only fighters, from people in the business, from fans in general, even casual fans, because casual fans kind of know who he is because of his crossover into the social realm, the social media realm. You know, and then he posts, like a thank you message from some balcony on the beach somewhere. And then people are saying that he's on vacation with like one of his baby's mamas or something like that. Look, if the kid if the kid is having mental issues and he's going through something, obviously get the help, you know, help, get the help you need, you know, take care of yourself. But the thing that concerns me is that he has a track record, and this is all fact, you know, people can dispute it, can try to dispute it when it's not. The track record is there. He has a track record of pulling out of fights or having issues with people, especially with his own promoter and Oscar De La Hoya. You know, last year or the year before, he was complaining, talking about he wanted to get paid more. He started posting on Twitter, on Instagram that he to get attention. And then within like a week or two, him and Oscar De La Hoya rewarded him with more money. And then they released pictures and video like, oh, it's the biggest contract for a prospect ever. And then what, how many months later, he started complaining again. We've heard things from people in the business off the record that he is the primary income earner for his entire family, which now includes both of his baby's mamas, which could, and you know, he's only what, 23, right? 22, 23.
Yeah. He's young.
He's a young kid. And that, I'm sure that doesn't help. You know, there's a lot of weight on his shoulders, which it's probably affecting him. The social media doesn't help. I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, I think the fame, he got it so fast, he wasn't ready for it. He just wasn't ready for it. And that has been contributing to his faults, if you want to call them that, to the issues he's been having. But, you know, and then I heard that Mario Lopez actually said that. And I think when Mario Lopez talks about Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy, I think people need to really listen what he's saying. Cause I think that's the closest thing you're going to get to something that's very, very accurate about Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy that you're ever going to get, because they're really good friends and they party, they hang out together. And he said that DAZN was actually pretty pissed off, and that DAZN, didn't believe it. They didn't believe that there was like a mental issue here. And they were irritated. So make of that what you will. But look, good luck to the kid. I hope he finds what he needs, but he's not helping his cause by posting pictures of himself on a balcony on a beach, saying thank you. You know, maybe he's went there to get away, which is great. You know, help yourself. You know, whatever kind of issue you're having, focus on yourself and figure it out. But then you have to also deal with the heat. You have to deal with the heat, especially in the sport of boxing. Cause then you have guys like Gervonta Davis, who I think tweeted out not soon after something along the lines, like, you know, I pretty much, he was kind of slandering Ryan Garcia in a tweet. I don't think he mentioned him by name, but he pretty much said like, you know, oh, he'll figure out stuff like that. I mean, he has his own issues with his own arrest and stuff like that, but it is what it is. It is what it is. But, you know, that's my rant on that. What do you think?
You know, I think just the day and the age that we live in, I think so many people, you know, live their life on social media. And obviously Ryan has done that because, and that's helped him. You know, he got to where he is extremely quickly because of the following that he has. But unfortunately, he wasn't, you know, he hadn't grown up enough to kind of understand that when you put all that stuff out there, you're going to get a lot of love, but you're also going to get a lot of hate.
Right.
You know, looking at him and from the things that he says, I think that he reads some of it, you know, he replies to a lot of it, and you know, instead of just letting it kind of roll off his back and just get along with what it is, I think he lets a lot of it, you know, go to his head and unfortunately also go to his heart. You know, hopefully do what he's going to do. If he has to go away to Hawaii or wherever it is that he is, log off social media altogether, get your head right, come back and just prove everybody wrong. You know, stay away, stop making these outlandish statements that you're going to fight all these people. I think that's one of the things that, you know, winds people up, is that he says he's going to do this, he's going to do that, and he does neither. But, you know, just go away, get yourself right for yourself, get yourself right for your children, for your family, and then, you know, just come back. You know, he's young enough that he can take a year, 2 years, come back at, you know, the age of 23, 24 years old, and just go away, find yourself.
Do you think that, I think we talked about this off air when we learned, when the news was released. Do you think he's the type of guy that if he gets a big payday, like a Manny Pacquiao, when he was trying, he tried to tweet it into existence. He tried to post about it into existence, and it didn't seem like it worked. Maybe it still could work. I don't know, because Pacquiao, supposedly Pacquiao Crawford is dead, and there's no deal there. Who knows? You never know. It could still work. Imagine that. But do you feel that if Ryan got like a huge bout like that, like a Pacquiao, makes the most money he's ever made, where he's like, you know what? I don't have to fight anymore. I got my social media fame. I can focus on my YouTube channel. Do you think after something like that, do you think he's the type of guy that would retire? And he's like, I can use all that money I made off of this one fight against somebody like Pacquiao and retire and go be a social media celebrity.
I think if it was set up to the point where he could do that and earn, you know, some good money, then yeah, I think he would. You know, he's already kind of, it's very unusual and obscure to really have just started your career and you're already talking about retiring at the age of 26. Kind of shows that you already don't really want to be in the sport, because, you know, how many times is it when you hear commentators talk about fighters and the fighters already said, like, you know, I'm going to have two fights and then I'm done. And, you know, they've already said, like, that's no good, because mentally he's already checked out.
Maybe. Do you think that, and now we're kind of going down the conspiracy hole here, but do you think there's any likelihood that, because he's represented by his lawyer or his advisor is Lupe Valencia. Lupe Valencia is a lawyer who represents a lot of Al Haymon fighters. I believe a lot more Al Haymon fighters. Am I wrong about that?
No, that's true. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of he's closely tied to the PBC guys, the PBC banner. And within the last 2 years or so, Ryan Garcia picked him up and brought him on his team. I mean, is it a coincidence that ever since then, this is when the issues have been beginning, mostly with Golden Boy? You know, is this a type of ploy, maybe to get out of his contract, maybe have Oscar De La Hoya just say, you know what, let's just release the kid. You know, it's not worth it. You know, let's just release him. He gets released and then he gets to go. Somebody else picks him up wherever he wants to go. And his price tag goes up.
I don't think he's looking to get out of his contract. I would agree that I think, you know, having that high powered lawyer who, you know, knows the business inside and out, is, you know, he's backed him to the hilt because he's probably seen the dollar signs from, you know, using Ryan's social media and, you know, what he could attract. And he probably looked at the contract he was on and, you know, I'm sure he gets a percentage. So, you know, it was in his best interest also, to, you know, to get Ryan onto a bigger and better deal. But I think you touched on, obviously, you know, Mario Lopez and Steve Kim, you know, they brought up that. And I think, you know, Kim and Mario were kind of saying, they probably don't know the contract that well, but I'm pretty sure they were saying, you know, it's a good contract and he wouldn't be getting, you know, it was watertight and, you know, Ryan couldn't really go anywhere else, you know, so.
Right. I mean, who knows?
Would you want him? You know, that's the thing at the minute. He's not looking very, you know, sellable. Like you touched on, obviously, with what's going on right now. Obviously, it's not his fault. And I'm not trying to say that, but I'm just saying that, you know, he's not boxing right now. He's pulled out of a lot of fights, stuff like that. So if you were PBC, Top Rank and Matchroom, you know, they may want to take the risk because of his following. But at the same time, he kind of brings a lot of disruption to the stable.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you had to compare him to something, but you got Virgil Ortiz, people, I've seen some tweets after he kind of pulled out of his fight. People had said, like, put Virgil on that card. Put him against somebody. Let him main event that card. Give him that card. I'm cool with that. I think everybody's a fan of Virgil. You know, he goes in there, he does his job, you know, but good luck to the kid. Good luck to him, whatever he's going through. Good luck to him. But, you know, I don't want to say we need to be skeptical, but because of his track record, especially the last year and a half or so, I think it's fair to be skeptical, of the most recent news. But, you know, if DAZN is skeptical, I mean, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? DAZN, the platform that you fight on, who knows? But yeah, I think you said he needs to just get off of social media, disconnect it, but he's a product of this generation. That's what it is. He's a product of this generation, and social media is like their drug. Everybody's on social media. Like a lot of people are, but like there's people older than us and younger than us and our age, like they're stuck on it. They're stuck on social media. Like they need it. It's like a drug, but especially kids at his age and his generation, they're all about it. It's an addiction. And like you said, I agree with you. I feel like he might be reading everything. He reads everything. And you can't do that. You cannot do that because not everybody is going to praise you. And you're going to have a lot of haters. There's a lot of negative things on the internet. He just needs to figure it out. But he needs to get off social media. But like in my original point at the beginning of all this rant, he just wasn't ready for the fame. He wasn't ready for the fame that he got so fast, and it's caught up to him in more ways than one.
You know, me personally, I've kind of given Ryan, you know, some shit in his performances and stuff like that. But I was kind of surprised at some of the things that Mario Lopez was saying, to be honest with you, kind of trying to throw Ryan under the bus because he's obviously good friends with Oscar De La Hoya. And, you know, I think we just need to kind of take Ryan at face value. If that's what he's saying, then, you know, that's what's going on. And obviously, you know, we like to do the old conspiracy theories, you know, is he going to face Manny Pacquiao? Is he trying to join the PBC? But, you know, deep down, I think, you know, me and you just want to see him get well, come back. And, you know, he's always in exciting fights. He's kind of like Amir Khan, and he goes down and then comes back up and then wins the fight against Luke Campbell. And, you know, he's got that kind of like Deontay Wilder-esque, like he's kind of losing, and then boom, you know, he wins. You know, he's exciting to watch. So, you know, we want to see him, you know, back in the ring, and, you know,
right.
Best wishes to him and all of his family. And hopefully we see him back soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck to him. You know, hopefully he figures out and gets the help that he needs. But, you know, he's definitely a polarizing figure at the young age of, what is it, 22, 23. He's definitely polarizing in the sport of boxing. And he has a lot of attention on him. But who knows? Who knows where it's going to lead? If you had to ask me, I don't think him and Golden Boy are going to be together that much longer. Like you said, going back to, Mario Lopez and Steve Kim, what Mario Lopez was saying, just based on what Mario Lopez says, as close as he is to Oscar De La Hoya, I think you can kind of tell that De La Hoya and Golden Boy are kind of getting frustrated. They're getting frustrated with the whole situation. And, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. You know, that's their issues. But, you know, like you said, he's like an Amir Khan. He's polarizing. He goes in there. There's a chance he could be knocked down. But then he comes back and wins. He was coming off the most significant win of his career against Luke Campbell. And he had all the momentum in the world. You know, and putting him against Javier Fortuna, that was a great matchup. In his development, that was a great matchup. And if he beats Javier Fortuna and knocks him out, even better. Even better. You know, it just helps him. But who knows? Who knows? There's obviously personal issues he's going through. And he's trying to figure it out. But we'll see. But I think we'll just end it with he needs to get off social media for a while. Take a detox. A sabbatical, yeah. Take a sabbatical. He needs to detox for quite a while from social media and just kind of, you know, stay away for his mental health, especially for his mental health. He needs to get off. And just either delete it or, you know, just delete it from his phone or something. He just needs to get off. So the more, you know, because that's the best help at the moment that he's going to get for his mental health. He needs to just get off of it. But before we sign off here, episode 127 of The Last Round. We do have shirts. We mentioned it in the past. We have shirts with Fit Warrior brand. And then we also have sweatshirts on there. Go and please support us. Go on the link. The link is on my Twitter account. I believe the link is also in a pinned tweet on my Twitter account. I think we have the link tweeted out on our social media, on Instagram and Twitter. So if you can support us, go ahead and support us. Please buy the shirt, buy the sweater. It all goes straight to us and to our expenses for this show. It helps us go to these events now that the world's opening back up, hopefully, and these fights are starting to come back. You know, it helps us with our expenses and traveling to these shows, getting on location interviews, in-person interviews now, especially, and putting out more content for you guys, more boxing content, obviously. So it definitely helps us if you support us. We would appreciate it. Once again, it's on Fit Warrior brand. I believe it's FTWRbrand.com. Is that correct, Mike? So if you can go out on there, support us, we appreciate it. If you tweet us or if you post it and tag us, we'll definitely shout you out, with the, and definitely shout you out on our social media and on that next episode, we'll definitely shout you out, you know, if you support us and help us out. But as we sign off here, Mike, go ahead and let our listeners know where they can find us and follow us.
We're at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And obviously be sure to join us next week for the preview of the big one, Canelo against Billy Joe Saunders.
I'm looking forward to that one. I'm definitely looking forward to that one. So as we sign off here, once again, I'm Danny Z. For my co-host, Michael Shepherd, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.